FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 9/17/18. As always, be a part of the show. Email us. We love getting emails from you trolls out there. Keep the troll posts coming. Some of them we even read on the show. They're so hilarious. And can't say enough good things about you trolls. You know, I'm living in your mind. We're living in your mind. And just remember that the next time you write an email, it's confirmation every time you email us that you are tormented souls who can't get the obsession out of your mind. Anyway, the email address for you trolls and everyone else who wants to write, in case you forgot, is kl@kerrylutz.com. Well, gold is hovering right around that $1,200 range. Oh, who knows where it's going to go? Has it hit a low? Well, John Rubino's with us, as he is always, almost every Monday, and he's got some opinions on the latest COT report, Commitment of Traders. John, happy Monday.
Hey, Kerry. Yeah, gold is doing a weird thing today. Its chart looks upside down because the arrow is pointing up. And I don't know what that means, but it's an interesting change from the last 6 months. And the COT report is a part of the precious metals story now, because it's gotten historically out of whack just lately, where the speculators, who are usually long, are now short, and the commercials, who are usually short, are now long to or flat to long. That hasn't happened in quite a while, and it historically means that the negative energy has kind of been washed out of the system, and it's time for, or the negative energy has peaked, and it's time for the market to reverse and start going up. Today we got a little bit of that. We'll see if it continues, but there are reasons to believe that it ought to. The Commitment of Traders report, the positioning in the paper markets, will probably swing back to the center or maybe a little bit beyond, which means that there will be a lot of buying pressure going forward. We got the seasonality turning favorable for gold and silver, with Asian buying in prospect and traders front running that process a little bit. So what normally happens in August and September is that the price of precious metals go up, and then they tend to jump in January when you get the real Asian buying coming in. So this is, technically speaking, a pretty good time for precious metals and a pretty good entry point if you don't have as much gold and silver as you would like. Good time to load up or increase your dollar cost averaging. It's also a good time to pick up some of these incredibly cheap junior mining stocks in the sector, because across the board, the gold and silver miners have been beaten down, and the little guys have been beaten down more. So if you're a speculator, or you have a little bit of your capital allocated to speculation, now is a pretty decent time to look at some of these mining stocks.
Yeah, well, it's kind of, every late winter, kind of early new year, it seems to be a cycle. It certainly has been for quite a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, if you look at the chart of, for instance, an index of mining stocks, you see that they tend to do badly towards year end and then have a really good January. And sometimes that carries over all the way through June. In 2016, there was a great run that started in January and went for about 6 months, and took a lot of these little stocks especially up two or three times from their December bottoms. So that's the kind of thing you hope for. And I think gold bugs in general are definitely hoping for that kind of thing again. Meanwhile, the long-term fundamentals for precious metals are phenomenal, just because we keep building up more and more debt in the world. And debt is deflationary once it's taken on. Mm-hmm. But then the response of governments to the deflation that flows from being over indebted is usually really inflationary. So you get a dynamic there where the economy slows down because we're over indebted. Governments launch new versions of QE and massive deficit spending programs, et cetera, et cetera. And that lights a fire under precious metals. That's why gold and silver took off after tanking in 2008, because the governments of the world reliquified the system really aggressively. And since we've taken on immense amounts of debts, even relative to 2008 levels, in other words, we're way more leveraged now than we were then, it's reasonable to expect the impact of all that debt to be magnified and to require even bigger government response from it. So, you know, we'll see. But that's part of the dynamic that that gives gold and silver really good long-term prospects. And nothing has changed to make me think that's not the case going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, it looks like it's baked in the cake, but like history doesn't repeat, it rhymes. It's rhyming pretty darn good now, that's for sure. You know, we had that question. I don't want to read the whole thing because it went on very long, but the question was about quantum computing and if there's a massive breakthrough, and then what's that going to do to cryptocurrencies? What's it going to do to the world if there's a massive breakthrough in quantum computing, which, as you said, has the ability to break, I guess, all of the encryption keys that are out there?
Yeah, quantum computing is apparently a real thing. You know, without going into the details of what sets quantum computers apart from today's supercomputers, suffice to say that they're way faster. And yeah. And because of that, in theory, they're able to break any of today's encryption schemes, which means whoever gets the first quantum computer basically has access to everybody else's bank accounts and everybody's military secrets and pretty much everything else. So that it's potentially a really destabilizing thing. Now, what that means for cryptocurrencies, I think, is anybody's guess. So I think the broader picture is the more interesting one, because it's completely apocalyptic at first. You know, if mm-hmm. for instance, China gets the first quantum computer, they have access to the U.S. banking system, or vice versa. You know, mm-hmm. if we get the first quantum computer, don't think we won't abuse that power, because we've abused all of our other powers.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
So this is one of those things that that's a wild card. You don't know when it's going to happen. And you don't know exactly what it means when it happens, because a lot of it is due to, you know, a lot of it is down to the decision making of the people who end up with this new power. But mm-hmm. it's potentially a very big deal in a lot of ways, and also potentially a very negative thing in a lot of ways. It could be great. Maybe we just use quantum computers to solve all our problems. And the result is paradise a decade down the road, or not, you know, and people being people. You can bet there will be some misuse of that kind of a technology.
Oh God, yeah.
So that's one of those things that you can't predict with any kind of certainty in terms of its timing. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things that we kind of have to put on the back burner and look at the stuff that is more predictable. Like all this debt is going to cause some trouble in the not too distant future. The emerging markets are going to be worse 6 months from now than they probably are today, because the dollar is still strong. You know, stuff like that is more predictable. Stocks are wildly overvalued. So any kind of trouble will lead to a bear market. Mm-hmm. In global stocks, if not U.S. stocks. See, those are the things that should occupy our minds for the next little while. Yeah. But we don't know about the big things that are further out. And quantum computing is one of those things. So it's conceivable that the world just gets more and more extreme and volatile for quite a while, because we've got an awful lot of things that point in the direction of volatility. There's a lot of environmental stuff that that people should be worried about. And we're making a lot of public policy mistakes. For instance, the hurricane that just hit North Carolina and South Carolina kind of illustrate mm-hmm. the mistakes that we're making. We're moving millions of people towards the coasts, especially in Hurricane Alley.
Yep. That's for sure.
You know, that's an inherently risky thing to do, because the more people we put there and the more buildings we put there, the greater the potential for loss when a really serious hurricane comes through. You know, this was a Cat 1 hurricane when it made landfall, and still it's causing billions and billions of dollars of damage via flooding. Let a Cat 5 hit Miami.
Oh, you don't want to think about it. Well, that's what they thought was going to happen with Hurricane Irma, but it never happened. For some reason, it never happened. You know, they're always predicting the next hurricane, and it just doesn't work that way. But at some point, no doubt, there's going to be a bad one. Hey, so more on this question, though. So what Brad asked, and which we're really not in a position to answer, is what's going to happen to the integrity of cryptos if quantum makes a quantum leap, if you will. And the other question is, could that be the pretext or the catalyst for the so-called global reset? We've been waiting and hearing about the global reset for years and years already, John. And guess what? It hasn't come. So it shows that everybody who thought it was coming up to this point, who thought it would be history by now, was basically wrong. So could quantum computing set off the next global reset?
Well, I was one of those people who thought a reset would come by now. It didn't seem like we could get to this point in terms of the numbers. But quantum computing, if one of its impacts is that it makes all encryption irrelevant, changes the world in such fundamental ways that it's really hard to predict. Because how do you do a monetary reset if all your bank accounts are basically open and available to the Chinese military or even to the NSA? So that's, again, a big wild card out there. If the technology of finance changes in some fundamental way, then finance has to change along with it. But it's not clear how we do that, because if you can't have online finance, then do we go back to physical money? Would we be storing our money in bank vaults and safe deposit boxes and under the bed rather than in online brokerage accounts and things? And would we be walking around with gold coins or some kind of paper, which I don't know how you would do that in a world where everything is hackable. But that's a very different world, and I have no idea what that world would be like. Now, assuming that there's no disruption via new financial technology over the next decade, then we kind of sort of have to have some kind of a monetary reset. You know, there's no real way around something like that. When you look at the damage that all this debt is going to cause, we'll have a global bond fiasco at some point, just because bonds are so numerous and so overvalued that a lot of sovereign debt will plunge in value, and that's going to be super disruptive. And you would think that at some point, governments will see the writing on the wall, and they'll get together and they'll want to preempt this gigantic crisis that they see coming by doing a monetary reset. In other words, Sunday night, they announce, okay, from now on, the world's major currencies are just names for certain weights of gold. If they go the gold standard route, there might be other ways to do it, but that the gold standard model is the best understood because we had one for 200 years. So the dollar is worth 1/10,000th of an ounce of gold going forward, or something like that. And that that puts us back on a stable monetary path after the initial burst of inflation. So that would be by far the simplest and least destructive way to get out from under all this debt. And because it's simple and understandable, it's probably the least likely thing that we do. You know, we'll probably have some gigantic crisis and then have some kind of a political revolution and then eventually go back to sound money. In other words, we make things messier than they need to be, because democracies don't like radical change until it's forced upon them by some kind of a crisis.
Right.
So that's probably where we're headed. And that just means, you know, gold and silver and other real assets are where you want to hide out during something like this, because those things will still have utility. They won't change in supply in any meaningful way during the turmoil of a global monetary / bond / equities crisis. So they'll protect your wealth better than will most financial assets. And that's the simple solution for individuals. In other words, just stop playing the game. Go to real assets and insulate yourself in that way from the inflationary games that are going to have to be played, that are being played, and that will have to be played in the future by governments that are in over their head financially.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And yeah, you just never know what's going to happen here, because the future is always uncertain, as we know, right? But you have to look at history and you pretty much have to take a guess, right? I mean, what else can you do?
Yeah, well, history has been a pretty good guide in finance for a really long time. There are some reasons to think that this time is somewhat different. And one of the differences this time around is that everybody is screwing up their money at kind of the same time, but the U.S. is perceived to be relatively safe, yeah, which means when there's trouble in the world, mm-hmm, capital flows in, and that supports our financial asset prices at the expense of the rest of the world. There was just a chart that was published, I forget where, but I saw it, showing global equity prices minus U.S. equities. Mm-hmm. In other words, the rest of the world's stock markets aggregated are going down. U.S. equities are holding up really well. So if you include them in global stocks, it makes the global stock market capitalization look more stable than it actually is. Everybody else taken together is heading into a bear market or is already there,
right,
while the U.S. is holding up. And that's the reason for that is that process of capital flowing into the U.S. because everybody else is in even worse shape. That's not a permanent thing, though. That's not a perpetual motion machine where we cause trouble in the world and that, yeah, makes our stock market go up. What it does do, though, is it allows us to borrow more money than we would be able to otherwise, because people still want dollars, even though our national balance sheet and all the related numbers are getting worse and worse and worse. So that just makes the crisis when it comes that much more serious, but it may delay the crisis that inevitably flows from all this debt within the U.S. The rest of the world, beginning with the emerging markets now, are starting to see some serious blowback from their financial mismanagement. A lot of emerging markets are tanking right now. The Chinese stock market is in a bear market, although that's arguably because of the trade war that we started recently. But it's also in part because they leverage themselves to the hilt, and they continue to leverage themselves to the hilt with the Belt and Road Initiative, where they're going around and building airports and roads and bridges in various emerging markets and lending the money to the locals to allow them to build out that infrastructure. So China has to borrow that money from somewhere, and so their debt is going up at the same time that other countries' debt to China is going up. So let those other countries not be able to pay, and then China is in serious trouble financially. So there's a combination of things going on with China. But the point is that the rest of the world is in not nearly as good a shape. Oh, and gold is actually doing really well in a lot of these other markets. So gold feels like it's in a bear market in the U.S. relative to the U.S. dollar. But you look at a lot of other countries, and gold is going up and up and up week after week because the local currency is going down. We're not immune to that. Eventually, it comes back here. And it's just a question of how long it takes the periphery problems to move to the core.
Yeah, very, very true. And hey, it's an inevitability, but yet when we look at it, it just keeps on being put off and indefinitely, put ahead. But at some point, right, you can't kick the can down the road anymore, and then this is it, right?
Yeah, frequently it's after everybody decides that we can indeed kick the can down the road forever that we find out we can't. That's how bubbles work. You need a critical mass of people who stop being skeptical and just decide to go with the flow. And that's the final blow off top. When people who have resisted borrowing and resisted buying for months and months and maybe years, finally throw in the towel and decide to go long, whatever asset class it is that's in a bubble. And that's when it ends. And you kind of see that out there in terms of public opinion. People are starting to come to the conclusion that we've got this figured out. You know, the monetary authorities and the central government know how to keep a boom going basically forever because it's in their interest to do it and they've got the tools to do it. So why wouldn't they do it? Which is the kind of thing you heard about tech stocks back in the 1990s and about housing in the US in the 2000s. And it never ends up being true. Because you can't violate the laws of economics and finance forever. You can bend them a little bit. You can find some loopholes in the short run. But in the end, the amount of money that you owe determines your future when that amount goes beyond a certain point relative to your cash flow. In other words, if you borrow more money than you pay off, things get crazy. And we're in that territory now. So the question becomes, how much more can we borrow before those laws of economics and finance start to bite? And that's what we don't know, because we've gone farther than I thought we could. But eventually this blows up on us. And it's just a question of when.
Yeah, just a question of when, like it has on every other society in every other civilization, right? In the past, we've seen
Nobody's been able to leverage themselves to the hilt and not have some kind of a repercussion from that. Mm-hmm. And the litany of countries that have destroyed their currencies and had to do some kind of a, you know, Latin American kind of thing where you lop three zeros off your money and then just go forward from there.
Yeah, Venezuela.
That's what they're doing. That's a really common thing around the world throughout history. Mm-hmm. And it happens when you make the mistakes that we are currently making. You know, if you just keep borrowing more and more money and you don't mm-hmm. spend that money wisely, in other words, you misallocate capital with leverage, eventually it blows up on you. And we're deeply into that now. You know, we're making the same mistakes that dozens or hundreds of other countries have made throughout history. For us as individuals, there's no way to stop this. There's no vote in an upcoming election that's going to matter to this process because whoever's in office is just going to keep on spending more and more money and borrowing more and more money. Exactly. And encouraging the private sector to do the same mm-hmm. thing. So all we can do as individuals is try to figure out how to set up our own finances. Mm-hmm. So we're relatively immune from this stuff. And again, you do that historically with precious metals, really well-chosen real estate in stable Absolutely. Markets, maybe energy assets, agricultural assets, things like that. Things that that can't be created out of thin air and that people will always need.
Yes.
And over time, that seems to work out.
Seems to. Hey, John, we got to go, but check out John's site, dollarcollapse.com. Check out financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Make sure you send us an email if there's any issues you want to discuss, kl@carrylutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz, and the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. We'll catch up with you again next week, John.
Okay, thanks, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.